back here on ESPN Mississippi 95.1, The Fan. Got to love that music, buddy. You strike a note. Just our next guest, I know, can identify that as, with that as well. Bojo Wood joined us from LaGrange, Georgia. Bojo, thank you so much for your time today. And certainly what a weekend to talk, at least talk about some of the results, some of it positive, some might be a little on the negative side today.
Man, Max, I'm going to tell you, this past weekend for me, I watched some games, and I thought, what in the world is happening to the world? And the biggest one for me is I know Florida State has struggled. I know Notre Dame's pretty good this year. But in this Florida State team, and I wanted to bring this up first because I know of your history there. I mean, I cannot remember in my lifetime, and I'm 57, Florida State truly being this low.
I'm going to give you a quick assessment. Again, remember, I've not been on the staff down there in 20 years, and I was fortunate enough to be part of that when they first started that run of 14 years in the top five. But I'm going to tell you, I think when they hired Willie Taggart to begin with, if they'd have just taken a little more time, Bojo, nothing personal against him, but look at his performance. He'd been three jobs in 3 years. He came in with a record of rehabilitating-type programs, and that looked good on paper. But I'm not sure this program, particularly with its history, is not bigger than the coaching staff. I just think that they're trying to bring it down a little bit, make it applicable to what they knew, and the players they had are better than that. I watched Cam Akers in high school. I mean, the kid was the best player in the state of Mississippi for more than 1 year, and they aren't getting anything out of him. And that's just one example I think I can look at. But to tell you the truth, I don't see him much better at the end of this year. And I think if major improvement doesn't take place, I think he'll get a 2-year contract.
Max, I'm glad that you said that because this is something that I heard that came from within the halls of the athletic complex at Florida State, that one of the reasons that Willie Taggart was hired is they felt like that he would not come in and push the way that Jimbo Fisher did. I want this. I want that. That Willie would be more than happy just to be able to come back home to Florida and have his dream job. And sometimes the easy way sometimes bites you in the butt.
Yeah, I think this one has. And if that attitude prevails, then he'll be, you know, next year he'll be looking for another job. Mm-hmm. You know what, Mo, you've been around this game a long time. You coached it. You understand. I've never seen a real nice guy win consistently. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen Mark Richt, and he's probably the best in the business with his personality. But I hadn't seen him in a championship game lately. Mm-hmm. He goes to Miami, back to his home base and where he went to school, they aren't doing too well right now. Mm-hmm. He had almost right at 10 wins a year in Georgia, but they weren't the right 10, if that makes sense.
Right.
Consequently, that attitude that a head guy at that major college level has to have is a lot different than what Willie Taggart has brought to Tallahassee.
I agree with you. Mike O'Kane, and I don't know if you remember Mike or not.
I do. Yes, I do.
You know, Mike was the he succeeded Dick Sheridan at North Carolina State. And he was when he got fired from North Carolina State, and he didn't do a bad job at North Carolina State at all. Then he became the quarterback coach, offensive coordinator at North Carolina. Then he was at Clemson for a few years, Virginia Tech. And then finished up his career at James Madison and East Tennessee State as an offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. And he told me one time, and this is back when he was at Clemson, and we were talking. He said, I came to realize that I was not cutthroat enough to be a head coach. And he said, I accepted that. He said, I'm in my element as an offensive coordinator and a quarterback coach. And to me, that just, you know, I think that's admirable for somebody to admit that, to be quite frank with you.
I don't think there's any doubt. And look, how many times have we said, we know every college coach can't go to the NFL and coach. And a lot of the NFL guys can't come back to the college game and be successful. Because all of us, within our personalities, can fit in a system somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the people I feel the sorriest for in this industry, Bojo, are those that never realize that.
Right.
They never figure out who they are and why they're where they are.
Mm-hmm.
They you know, there was a reason they got there, because mm-hmm. the head guy or the administration that was hiring, even if it's a head guy, mm-hmm. felt like that they had something to offer that particular program.
Right.
You know yourself, but once you get inside and go to work every day, it may not be all it was built up to be or perceived to be.
Right. That's exactly right, Max. Well, Max, we usually talk about the SEC. One thing that jumped out at me is that now the SEC looks like they're going to be guaranteed at least 10 of the 14 members are going to be bowl eligible right now.
Yeah, it does look like that.
Mm-hmm.
It sure does. And, you know, I think that bodes well for the conference. More strength. You know, I think Tennessee stepped up, and I think they're the most real mm-hmm. Of the teams that really had to make had the furthest to go.
Mm-hmm.
We know Kentucky came a long way all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
But that's been a rebuilding process, with Coach Stoops for a while, 4 or 5 years, and getting them there. Texas A&M, we know that knew that there was some talent there, but it was a different kind of talent, and mm-hmm. I think Jimbo will purge that out. And he'll have those guys. I think Jimbo's got a uphill battle. He probably didn't realize when they scheduled UAB they'd be what they are.
Right.
He better not be looking ahead to LSU. He better be looking at UAB coming up this weekend. But you're right. I think from top to bottom, it does look like the conference is going to do very well in the bowl presentation.
Mm-hmm. And Max, of the games this week, obviously Georgia impressed me with the way that they manhandled
yep.
Auburn. Auburn had an early drive, looked good, but you take away the last drive where they just were getting garbage yards on the second and third stringers of Georgia's defense. They still didn't rush for 100 yards. I don't know what has happened to Auburn, quite frankly. It is it's a mess.
It's internal. You know that.
Yeah, it is, and there's a little snippet going around on the internet right now, saying it shows Malzahn, and you look at him and it looks like he's saying they're going to fire me, and I asked some people within the building down there, you know, man, did he really say that or what have you? And no, what he said was that would happen right after he jumped on one of the officials about he thought Georgia was getting away with a lot of holding, which, you know, as an old defensive coach, I think all the offenses are getting away with a lot of holding. but he was complaining about that, and he wasn't saying they're going to fire me. He said they're going to fine me, and which makes perfect sense there.
Well, you know, you go back and look, and let me ask you this. I want to jump over to the Mississippi State-Alabama game and mm-hmm. in relationship to what you just said. I think what Mississippi State did, regardless of the two questionable calls, we all know all that. I'm in Mississippi. I've mm-hmm. been heard it off and on all day long. I agree that there were a couple of bogus calls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's neither here nor there. I'm going to tell you what, in my opinion, Boji, that Mississippi State did. They wrote the game plan for Georgia. I don't know about Auburn, where they got enough and out, but Georgia, Clemson, and
Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And Michigan's defensive front, they wrote the game plan how to beat Alabama.
They certainly did, Max. And, again, I'm not playing to your audience over there. I'm just being quite frank about it. And I will say the SEC, they need to get on the same page as far as reviewing turnovers. If you're going to review every scoring play, you need to review every play where there was a controversial play, whether it was a turnover or not. That was ridiculous for that not being reviewed. And then also on the block in the back that wasn't a block in the back, you and I both know that is not the linesman's call to make. That is the back judge and the field judge. And why did those officials not huddle together and say, hey, wait a second, you know, I know you saw this from your vantage point, but we saw this from our vantage point, and get that thing overruled? You know, and again, I can't say, you know, we don't know what the fumble would or wouldn't have had effect
Very
on the
true.
Game, but we do know this, that it's a lot different going in at half down 21-7 right after you've scored than going in 21-0 and having all the momentum pulled out from under your feet. And you look
again, some of the people in our industry, not working in our industry, but that follows our industry, that line, that point spread, means a lot to them.
Mm-hmm.
And Alabama exceeded that by 1 point.
Right.
Miraculously.
Yeah.
So, you look at that and said, well, how much of that really mattered?
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of the Mississippi State people over here, not none, but the ones we've talked to, they readily admit they don't think they could have beaten Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But they think that there was some judgment calls in there that really should not only, as you said, should have been reviewed, but really somebody needs to be held accountable for.
I totally agree with you there. And again, maybe they couldn't have beaten Alabama. Who knows what happens if you get Alabama into the second half, and it's
very
a 7-point game. Who knows what happens? But, at the very least, I think that game ends up, 24-7, 24-10. If you take away those two controversial calls, and again, there was no effort on the officials' part to even to verify and make sure that they got it right. That that concerns me. But to your point, yes, Mississippi State has laid out the blueprint for Michigan, Clemson, and if Notre Dame runs the table and gets in, of course, I think their biggest test is going to be this week up in Yankee Stadium versus Syracuse. That's a Syracuse team that had Clemson beat. They've got two losses now. But that's a team that had Clemson beat and had a big old offensive tackle, just stood up and acted dumb instead of wandering downfield. Syracuse beats Clemson in Death Valley, and we're not really even talking about Clemson as the number two team in the nation right now. So Notre Dame better be very wary about going into New York and taking on Syracuse at Yankee Stadium on Saturday.
Yeah, I still think, of course, Jim Harbaugh's never beaten Urban Meyer either.
Right.
So, that's another one at the end of the year that we could still have some changes at the bottom. I think the top two are going to be pretty safe now that they got by, particularly since Alabama got by Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Auburn's going to present a problem to them, and certainly not Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia's gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
But, I will tell you, I was not impressed at all. I knew they were young, had a lot, but that defense, they lost seven guys off there from last year.
Mm-hmm.
But that bunch is coming along. They got a defensive back, it's a nickelback, I think, and he plays some linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
That number 18, he got him about two or three pass interference calls.
Yep.
And I think if I'm Alabama, that's who they're going to probably pick on to start with to see if they can draw a flag and or a completion off from it. But that being said, they got to protect the quarterback, because I don't believe, and I want to get your opinion too, I don't believe Alabama, as good as they have been, can win the national championship with Tua, without Tua.
I don't think they can either. I will say this: if they had not had Tua from the very beginning, and they had built their team totally around this defense, as Nick Saban's done before, he's won a national championship with a no-name offense and a great defense. But again, you don't change horses in the middle of the stream, and that's what they would have to do right now. If Tua doesn't play, this is a totally different look from an Alabama offense. They don't.
I know that's right. But here's the thing that, based on it, I'm trying to go back and piece together some of the things that Coach Saban said. Because you've been around long enough to know everything that Coach Saban says, he's sending a message to somebody. I mean, that stuff is scripted.
Right.
Yeah, that just didn't come off the top of his head. And what did he say after the game? He said, we've got to protect the quarterback better.
Yep.
All right, let me tell you what, from an offensive standpoint, you know this. What means they're going to have to keep a tight end in or a back end, one or the other. And normally on 90% of their passing, the tight end and the back's in the route.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're going to have to change and probably just put three guys in the route as opposed to putting five.
Mm-hmm.
How they can work on that between now and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
They can show some of it against Auburn. But they better get ready to play Georgia with more than what they got right now.
Yeah, and Max, how I expect them to be able to do that is, one thing Mike Locksley has always done a good job of is he's always been able to incorporate motion into the actual play. You know, a lot of times coaches will go motion and they really don't even know why they're running motion just for the, hey, we're going to run zip motion here, zoom motion, because it sounds cool and it looks cool. But Mike Locksley actually incorporates motion into the actual makeup of the play itself. And he does a great job with Irv Smith Jr., getting him open on little bootleg routes, little quick outs after off of that little quick motion that they run. And I think, of course, he's so big and he's so physical, they're going to be able to use him in motion and protect on that backside, because I think the big thing, of course, with Tua being left-handed, he can always see the usually who is your stronger rusher, your left end, because, you know, again, defensively, we're always trying to attack the backside, and just by design, usually the right defensive end is your best pass rusher, you know, by design. Sure. And, of course, with Alabama, with him being a lefty, either teams have got to flip the scenario and put him on the backside. But one way or the other, they're going to use Irv Smith. They're going to use those little short motion backs to be able to help give that extra protection. And then I think the key that they're going to do is they're going to protect, and then all of a sudden they're going to slip him out in the flat and give a little dump. And so now what's this motion guy doing? Is he in the route? Is he in pass protection? What's he doing? And I think that's where Mike Locksley is going to do a good job of throwing chaos at Georgia and Clemson and Michigan or Notre Dame, whoever they face down the road.
Yeah, and the sad thing from a fan, we won't see any of that. May I just a play or two against Auburn, but we won't see it till they play Georgia.
No.
So, am I not right? They'll work on it from now to then.
Yeah.
In practice every day, but we won't get a chance to see. They know they can, you know, my opinion is they ought not even put Tua out there this week. You know, they ought to use Matt Jones as a starter, and they ought to use Jacobs as a wildcat and let them run the ball and throw the ball down the field. Because they're going to beat Citadel whatever they want to, and let as many people play as they can see fit to. Then the Auburn game comes up; they'll have to certainly do more there, and I think they'll be prepared to do that. But I think that they are sitting in pretty good positions. I just Jalen Hurts can't play right now. You know that, and I do.
He can't.
And I know they know that.
Yeah.
I saw him pick up a ball and throw it around a couple of times Saturday. He was no more interested in. And Coach Saban was no more interested in trying to put him in as he would you or I.
No.
But the fact is they've got him on the roster. And I know Coach Saban keeps saying, well, in an emergency, if Jalen Hurts had to play, they'd have to put a straight chair out there for him to sit in.
They would.
Behind the center, because I don't think he could run a step.
No. If Jalen Hurts went in the game for Alabama, it would turn into get the snap and hand the ball off, because he can't put any weight on that ankle. He can't transfer weight. He can't get any zip on the ball whatsoever. I think that he's done at least till the playoffs, if they were to need him in the playoffs. I think him being in uniform, Max, I think that has been it's been a charade, to be quite frank with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think it's motivation for the players and that kind of stuff. And Coach Saban's he's a miracle man when it comes to doing this. Hey, let's jump around that quick. Your thoughts about South Carolina and Florida. South Carolina goes in there, and I thought they had that game won. Florida was, they were down 32-14 or something like that. And then all of a sudden, here comes Flippy Franks, decided he's going to put on a show, and he did. I thought they'd probably use Emory Jones in there somewhere, but looks like he's trying to save him. You know, I know he's been in two ball games. He still got two he could play in before the red shirt came off. But hats off to Florida for staying, I think, on task and pulling that game out.
Yeah, and you look at this game, and first of all, Felipe Franks came in there with a chip on his shoulder after being booed by the Florida fans against Missouri. He was ticked, and he really didn't want to hear all that cheering going on. He was telling them, y'all just be quiet. And of course, after the game, You know, you can celebrate a victory like that, but I can understand that young man's feelings, you know, after what he's been through. And then and no player, you know this, I've never had a player, you've never had a player that went out with the intention of playing badly. And
no.
And when and certain young men, they can let those they let the crowd roll off their back, but there are other positions, there are other young men that it truly affects them. It affects their psyche. It affects how they go through the week. And Felipe came into that game with a huge chip on his shoulder. And, Max, you look at this game, it's almost like the flip happened. South Carolina, they come out hot, and then they start dying down. The Florida Gator defense shuts them out in the fourth quarter. And then on the flip side, Florida, nothing in the first quarter. Looked inept, even heard the Boo Birds coming out early in the game in the first quarter. And then they get hot and they just keep fighting back. Those 14 points in the fourth quarter, you and I both know Dan Mullen. We know how he prepares football teams. And one thing about a Dan Mullen team, they're going to be strong in the second half. If you don't believe that, go back and look at the way they've played Alabama the last few years, three of the four last years that Dan was at Mississippi State. Those guys are going to be conditioned, and they're going to be ready to play in the fourth quarter. And I don't know if South Carolina took the foot off the gas. I really, watching the game, I was kind of flipping back and forth, and all of a sudden, like, ooh, I need to keep watching this. And I think they may have taken their foot off the gas so much that when they tried to ramp it back up, they couldn't get anything going. I mean, Jake Bentley was sitting there with, over 200 yards passing going into the fourth quarter, and he ends the game, I think, with about 239, 240 yards passing. So, I don't know if they took the foot off the gas offensively thinking they could coast on in, but whatever it was the wrong decision.
I think there's a lot to that, Bogey, because I think no one looking down the road, they got to play Clemson in a couple of weeks, and I think, they don't want to get anybody hurt, and I think that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. I love what Dan Mullen said. He told those guys that before the game and at halftime, if you don't think we can win, you stay in the dressing room. We mm-hmm. don't want you on the sideline.
Yep.
And I think he was serious about that.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. We know that's his he's a little tougher coach than a lot of people give him credit for.
Yes, he is.
He speaks to them in language they understand.
Mm-hmm. My son had the opportunity to play for him for a couple of years at Mississippi State and then serve as a student coach for him. And I can assure you that, Dan Mullen with that old toothy smile and that aw shucks grin and everything, he's one tough hombre.
Well, I don't think you can get to that level and be successful as he's been without being that. All right, one more I want you to comment on. I had a call earlier in the show today, said that they really couldn't believe a Tennessee team could get as excited as they are from a fan base. And under the conditions that they came into this year, mm-hmm. and they've won five games now, they got a chance to get six, at least mm-hmm. go bowl bound. And here was my response. If you'd have been through Derek Dooley, Lane Kiffin, and mm-hmm. Butch Jones, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you see this team playing at the level they're playing, would you not be excited too?
Oh, no question about it. Max, I'm going to equate this. It's kind of a little bit of different circumstance because, I love Doug Barfield. Doug Barfield, he took the Auburn job after Coach Jordan retired. And there was a lot of stipulations. He had to keep a lot of the former staff. There was a lot of infighting on that staff originally.
Right.
He was saddled with probation that he had absolutely nothing to do with. Auburn lost scholarships. And you look back over the course of his 5 years at Auburn, if he just beats Alabama one time out of those 5 years, he probably doesn't get fired because he had a winning record overall. But, just like with Bill Curry, he couldn't beat Auburn, he's gone. Coach Barfield, could not beat some great Alabama teams back in the late 70s, and so he was gone. But the last year that Coach Barfield was there, there was so much dissension, so much apathy from the fan base, and it didn't matter what happened. That team on Saturday was not going to be appreciated, and they ultimately quit. And I think that's what happened last year with Tennessee and Butch Jones' last year. I think that, the players, there was no fight in the players. You go back to when Coach Dye's first year at Auburn. And Coach Dye's first year, they were 5-6. And obviously did not get to a bowl game, but they were 5-6. But if you talk to Auburn fans, old-time Auburn fans, they'll say that is one of our most favorite teams because it didn't matter who they were up against, they were going to fight. They learned how to fight, and they got better over the course of the year. And I think that's what we're seeing with this Tennessee team. You know, we've watched this Tennessee team grow up over the course of the year, and not necessarily talking about talent level or what have you, because as Jeremy Pruitt said, hey, you know, the only thing that's going to get us close to Alabama is two more recruiting classes. You know, he's on record as saying that. But the thing that I think these Tennessee fans like about this team is that at the first of the year we saw them, and you know, they could be lethargic when they got behind. We're not now. You know, it doesn't matter. They keep fighting. They actually kept fighting against Alabama. Alabama was just that much better than they were. But over the course of the year, they continued to fight and continue to learn how to compete. And I think that's what these Tennessee fans are really excited about. Not necessarily a 5-5 record, but I think they do see good things on the horizon for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols.
You know what's scary from a fan's perspective? They got a chance to win 7.
Yep.
If they beat Missouri Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And I think, they played, they got a good chance.
Right.
I really do. And, I've had one Tennessee, big-time Tennessee fan on with us this morning, and that's what he said. And I'm going to leave you with this one today. I've been in a stand sitting at the top of a 110,000 seat stadium, and that is not fun when it's swaying in the wind. And I had a chance to be in the press box. Mm-hmm. But my best memories is Calhoun's on the river. Mm-hmm. That's always.
Ooh.
And I told him the only difference about that is going to the stadium, you got to walk uphill both ways. But you know, I think really Jeremy Pruitt's turned the corner with them as far as the fan base. I think they got really a bright future ahead of them.
Yeah, I do too. I totally agree with what he says about, you know, they need a couple of more recruiting classes in there until they can really compete. But I love the fact that this team will fight and fight. Now this is what I want to see from this Tennessee team over the next couple of weeks. Again, you know, they're sitting at 5-5. They got a chance to be 7-5, go to a decent bowl game. And but it all depends upon how they come out and compete these next 2 weeks. I think that's going to be huge in when we gauge this Tennessee team at the end of the year about how far they came from game 1 to game 12.
I don't think it's in that. Bojo, we got up against a break. Thank you so much for your time today. We'll do it again next week.
Talk to you, Max. See you. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.